Hello, and welcome to Compare Basic Mondays on Tuesdays podcast. It is, in fact, being recorded on Tuesday night, which is not the idea. The idea is to record on Monday, release on Tuesday. My name is Firecrill Silver Knight. I am your host and founder of Compare Basic, and this is the Mondays on Tuesdays podcast. So, I was hoping to have a live demo to announce this evening. I do not, in fact, have a live demo, though the components that are working are incredibly powerful and have a fantastic future. It will be live at code.comparebasic.com. By the time you hear this, it probably will be really interesting. I spent the last week working a little bit too hard in too many of the wrong hours. And what I mean by that is that I've noticed as the sort of person calling the shots on what to build and building it and thinking about how to balance crowdfunding, awareness time, planning, marketing, business planning, all that kind of stuff. What happens is if I work late, I lose the morning of the next day. And I've also had the experience of where, you know, I work a bit too much and then I come in the next day and it's just, you know, it's all in the wrong direction. And with a system with as many applications as the Sonica runtime, building something in the wrong direction is a bit of a big deal. So I have this pattern that I've noticed that's really interesting, which is that almost every single evening, I end with less than I wanted to. And almost every single morning, I come in and tie it all together, and it's really nice. And I think the reason here is exhaustion, is that it is far more likely that things will begin working in the beginning of the day. And then I get kind of exhausted towards the end. So the update from Compare Basic today is that a number of the components perform exceedingly well. The analogy I gave to my partner is that it's kind of like a 2 + 2 + 2 = 8 problem. And if you did the math, you would know accurately that 2 + 2 + 2 is in fact 6, and there was a component worth 2 points that was missing. And that component specifically ended up being the way that the templates tie together and cache and process. And I try not to go too into tech details. And as you know, on the Compare Basic Monday on Tuesdays podcast, when the music plays the 5-minute mark, the boring updates about Compare Basic itself will end, and I'll talk about something interesting. The topic of today won't be that long because I am exhausted from the week. And so I'll just do a short recording of some things I've been kicking around. What I was hoping to introduce is the topic of marketing and hatred. And it's not marketing through hatred. But the concept is to illustrate what hatred actually is and how I define it, and as well, what marketing is and how I define it. And the reason is there's actually, in my mind, a bit of overlay between sort of the way things are done. So the update from Compare Basic is after the demo runs, then it's the MVP, which will be a small product I call Echo, where you email it, it emails you back businessy stuff, something you can copy and paste right into Excel, eventually an open document, something you could use to put directly into or in place of Microsoft Word. And as well as, you know, two-dimensional barcodes in the style of a QR code and links and imagery sizing and all these things that with a simple markup, you can email and it can email back to you. And that's sort of the foundational piece of the email to site product. But what emerged as part of the login system is something I talked about in the last podcast, which is called Phrase Key. And that was just used because I started looking at login security and I was like, so I wanted a better option. And that actually will become something that harpers back to a former project I had that was also a solo venture of mine that didn't really go very well. It was the last few months of me living in England, called IO Ledge Software was the name of it. That name is now belongs to someone else. But IO Ledge Software was based on the cryptographic completeness of digital signatures. So there's a chance that building the login system stumbles upon something for a broader business product. And I can't wait to go back to my animation days to make, some data visualization stuff, because I find that, you know, very, very basic trigonometry and linear algebra statistics really interesting. And there's a part of the web server that now will contain that for the machine statistics. And so, as excited as I am, it's a little hard to not have something live yet. And now the music starts. All right. So on the marketing front, I'll be honest, I'll try and keep my feelings of hatred towards conventional marketing out of the podcast, because I don't think anyone wants to hear that tone from me. I definitely don't want to live in that tone, and I definitely don't want to be in the parts of my life where I did live in that tone. And I'll talk briefly about the reason why marketing and hatred are joined for me, and it really comes down to my sort of love affair with being a lifelong craftsman. I was making things out of duct tape and cardboard before I could make them in the computer. And I was then making things out of, bakeable Sculpey clay. And I've always been sort of a maker, tinkerer person. And the angle on marketing I hear at times is it's a replacement for that value. I have a joke I say that it's somewhat hilarious that the phrase, you got to cover your bottom line is synonymous with business. And the more I learn about accounting, it really is just a balanced ledger of things got to add up. One thing's got to go from one place to the next. And every business is made of both of those sides. I mean, the top line of the business and the bottom line of the business will together define the entire thing. And so marketing to me seemed kind of like the escape hatch for businesses that had focused too much on their bottom line and cut their staff down to a skeleton crew, and then needed to pay someone to, lipstick on a pig style, make it look nice so they can ship it out to people. And so for a very long time, I've had a profound resentment for the idea that marketing was championed kind of as a way to get rid of the craftsman, as a way to like not improve the quality to improve the top line of the business. Like in a restaurant, it would be, how do you cook this so that it has a higher sales value, because it's either rich enough that you can serve a smaller portion, which would increase, the efficiency. Again, now we're talking about the bottom line, or it's a high priced dessert, or it just attracts more sales because it's done better. What service angle? A law firm could do, extensive R&D research that's unbillable, but it makes them knowledgeable enough that they can now have a higher price point because they're seen as more dignified. These are all business things that have nothing to do with the bottom line. They're all about the top line. And so to me, the idea of marketing comes down to one thing that's very, very interesting, which is, are you amplifying awareness of some product or service you have done very, very well? Or are you adding a lot of muscle behind something you know have not done well? Do you want to drown out your competitors simply because you believe they are better, or you might know they're better? And are you taking something that is amazing and polishing it and sending out to the world? And does your marketing highlight the fantastic sides of it? Or are you hiding things that you are nervous about? And I also want to talk a little bit about competition, and this is the segue into the concept of my definition of hatred, which is competition as a word to me is very, very different from the term combat. And I would define it this way. Combat is, like, I think, best encapsulated in the phrase of this. This isn't to get too dark, but it's break their knees and crack their skulls and then walk over their dead bodies to get what you want. To me, that's combat, right? Combat is when you are out to destroy. Competition is when someone has raised the bar on something, and you then raise the bar on them, and they then raise the bar on you. And at the end of the day, everybody wins. You win, they win. You're better competitors because of the competition of it. And my best analogy in business is something that I don't have a lot of hard data on, and so I hope this lands well, but I've always wondered why restaurants and car dealerships and retail stores, they seem to appear in clusters. And this is a really interesting question on the subject of how competition is viewed in the business world, because if you viewed competition through kind of a combat-y lens of like, We gotta destroy the competitors or they'll take our business.
Well, that's very contrary to the idea of people will buy more of our cars if they can go across the street and conclude that they are not the person who wants to drive that car. They are, in fact, a good customer for us, and vice versa. If someone shows up and genuinely will end up buying the car across the street anyway, and they use our test drive to help include sales across the street. And so I've always wondered if the car dealerships all tend to be in the same area for the purpose that that competition is increasing sales for both car dealerships. If restaurants are an essential area because people knowing there's an area of restaurants increases business for all of them. And that variety and ecosystem is very different than a sort of combat, we're going to squash the competition kind of a thing. And so the reason why marketing and hatred are somewhat linked for me is because there does seem to be a business concept here that is more about tearing people down than it is about growing in fair competition. I mean, the amount of discussion about market share, as like winning, as if like bigness and territory is winning. And as a small company, I looked a lot at very niche audiences. And the first thing I found was the power user audience, because the power user audience has really been left behind. And when I go over my economics, I don't need the number of users of sort of the big companies. And if big companies have an established product that has a certain usability and a certain tone, then they cannot afford to offend certain users. So here's how that breaks down. Let's imagine that there is a product that has customers in 60% of American businesses, right? They are far more likely to release features that are generic and general and not super niche. And the reason for that is that if they were to take 3% of their market and lose that, that's a big deal. And so they market to the majority audience that they serve because they serve such a large portion. Now, if someone has no customers, such as Compare Basic right now, it's in our best interest to not compete directly with the customers that that large company is competing with. It's actually in our best interest to compete to serve the 3% that cannot get what they want from them. And that's because we don't have any risk of bothering the rest of the audience. I mean, offending people is never a costless endeavor. I know that one for sure. But what I'm getting at here is that for small companies, for upstart companies that don't have ex an existing audience that would be dislodged by an interruption to the conventions they expect from a certain product, there is tremendous opportunity. And I would put that it squarely in the category of competition rather than combat, because there's a very high chance that if this was more common, if there were more sort of just like very strange niche products coming out, there could actually be learning opportunities in the entire industry that may not happen if everybody is in a like copycat the big companies because we can't afford to fall behind. And the big companies are actually like, we really wish we could do some smaller experimental things. It's just that, you know, we've got more to lose by experimenting than we have to gain, whereas a niche company has more to gain th than to lose. And the analogy here that I like to use, I call the big pigeon, small pigeon example. The big pigeon, when a human very, very badly for their diet throws down a piece of bread at the park, the big pigeon knocks the smaller pigeons off the piece of bread. And the small pigeons are upset, and some of the small pigeons get so upset that they are not the big pigeon that they keep fighting, and every day they go home hungry, they get smaller and smaller and smaller. And the more intelligent small pigeons don't even try. They don't try to compete with this big pigeon. They wait for the crumbs to bounce far away, and they know that they are faster than that big pigeon. And they find the small crumbs, and every day they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And one day they're big enough to knock the actual big pigeon off of the larger piece of bread. What happens after that in this story, I don't know. I didn't think that far. But that's what I call the small pigeon, big pigeon analogy. The idea that the small pigeon is the fast one that goes finds the tiny little breadcrumbs that the big pigeon is not interested in and then slowly grows to become in itself a big pigeon. And what I want to talk about in terms of hatred is the idea of like, what is hatred? It's not dislike. It's not discontent. It's not discomfort. It's like a irrational desire to just get rid of something. And I think this only really happens for someone who genuinely feels like there is no way forward with that situation. And one of the things I was thinking about is that you know, I don't really do well in academic settings. I'm not very well educated officially at all. And a lot of resentment brewed in me over the years about sort of falling behind in education, so much so that I actually just dropped out of high school. It's like, people like my computer stuff, they don't like my academics. I'm going to go with where, you know, the compliments are, and it's definitely not in school. And I think I went into the industry really, really, really with something to prove. And we can say, after all these years and what I've built with the sneak of runtime, it's good that I had something to prove. But there were many, many uncomfortable business and to some extent friendship interactions, because I was just so driven. And for me, my hatred was this feeling of, if people don't see what I see, then things will be bad. And sadly, I have some examples of companies that were unable to act on things that I knew about that over time did turn out to be bad. You know, things like, we're going to need a better context system because, you know, if the clients and the agents and the customers can't all talk in real time, then they're probably going to cancel. And sure enough, that project was canceled because of time constraints. And then later on, it turned out to be a large pain point that had some, you know, some real consequences for the company. And I think that some people just wake up in the morning not really wanting to compete. And they don't want to compete because, can you blame them? The working world is so hard, and especially now that I'm somewhat exposed to the blue-collar working world, having day jobs in restaurants. Can we really blame anyone in this day and age for concluding that the economy and the working world is too hard and they want to find a way around it? They want to find a way into money for money's sake. And this is where the hatred comes in, because there's such a conclusion that they cannot make a living off of what they actually want to do. Solving the problems that they want to solve is out of reach. And when you wake up that way, believing that you need an advantage, you would like to rely on advantagism and basically cutting the line, you quickly get into a our people versus their people situation, simply because opportunity for everyone means you're waking up with that many people that you have to share things with. And if you really believe that you are not competitive and not intelligent and not smart and not someone who can make their way in the world, what example do you have to talk you out of that? You know, my entire experience has been that people are only excited about me breaking convention when I pull it off. Like, even if they think it's a good idea, there's such a like, well, definitely don't switch companies quickly, even though that was how I learned everything early in my career, was by being for companies usually less than a year, like I think 7 or 8 times in a row. And, you know, people were so worried that I was going to trash my resume. And so I think when it comes to marketing and hatred, I think real hatred breeds from the fundamental belief that we can't all do this together. We don't have something to grow. We only have something to lose. And I think there are certain marketing strategies that pretend that people don't have a good reason for buying something from someone else. And I think the approach to marketing that makes the most sense for me is the idea of, this is what we have, this is what we don't have. And to extend the car dealership analogy, if you would like to test drive the car across the street to give you a reason to come back to us, please do so. And so that sort of honest, hate-free marketing approach, where you really talk about what you have and in some cases what you don't have, I think is what really moves the needles on sales. I met a salesperson at one point that said something I find very interesting. He said, you know, the most important thing in a sales conversation is if you can get the no's to be faster, you can spend more times on the yeses. And that was so interesting. You know, like there's such a reputation in salesmanship of talking people into things they don't need. And what he was able to clarify is that in effect, figuring out that people don't need you can be the best gift of time that you can give yourself, because you can then spend time with the people and on the customers that do need you. So I'm hoping that as we round the corner from R&D into building things into sales and marketing, we can roll out things that are either complementary and cooperative and collaborative with other products. I focus quite a bit on transactional formats and things, and partly because I've worked at a lot of companies where simply transforming the API attributes we got from some supplier was a huge problem. So I'm hoping that as we emerge into the marketing strategy, it's really about storytelling and authentically identifying value. And I would encourage everyone to consider that boundary between combat and competition, because I think something's been lost in how the business community so easily talks about market share squashing the competition, and it's not incredibly clear where that goes. And sometimes the best thing someone can do is have a taste of what's out there from other people so that they know what they can get from you.